Hey, this is Frank Fontano. You guys are listening to Masters of One podcast. You can find me at Frank Fontano.
Welcome to another episode of the Master of One podcast, the podcast that's never too old to get excited about a trip to the treasure box. In this episode, we talk about making fun, Joshua Ranger, Five Points Festival, and we talk with Tom Whalen in his regular segment, 10 with Tom. I'm Andrew, your Master of Art and Design.
I'm Patrick, your Master of Television and Film.
And I'm Luke, your Master of Toys and Games.
So set your phasers to fun, because it's time to play.
I want them to stun.
We like to kick every episode off by going around the table, which is where we talk about something new, fun, and noteworthy about our weeks. Luke, let's start with you.
Okay. So listen. I just got a game. And
Patrick's already yawning.
It's fine. Okay, it's not a good sign. I know, but it's fine.
You're two words in.
I'm trying to ignore it. I got two video games, and they're both amazing. The first one is Far Cry 5. So Far Cry 5, we talked about it a little bit. I actually got a chance to play it. Man, it is so good. It's just, it's open world. You're going around trying to build a resistance against this cult that has taken hold of a town in Montana. And
like a religious cult, right?
Yep. It's crazy. It's good. It's a good game. The second one is a game you might have seen the video on Facebook of this person playing this VR game where they use like lightsabers to hit these boxes. It's called Beat Saber.
Yeah.
And I got that and I busted out the VR again, and me and the boys were having a blast. That game is so fun. There's only like 10 songs, but there's like beginner, normal, medium and hard, or normal, hard, expert difficulty. And man, once you get to hard and expert, it's intense. It's really fun though. It has you moving side to side to like miss like these blobs that kind of like will end the level if you hit them. So you're ducking, you're moving left and right, and then you have a red lightsaber in your left hand and a blue lightsaber in your right hand, and you're hitting these boxes, and like you're either swinging at them from the left or from the right or up or down, or you know, hitting them away, like pointing at them to the beat of these songs, and it's super fun.
Is it hard? Because
it's hard once you get to like the hard and expert levels, but the beginner it's super easy.
Okay. So it's like Guitar Hero in that way.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Okay. But it's really fun. It's like, I don't know if you guys ever saw that game. I talked about it a while ago called Thumper. It's like, it's a similar kind of graphics. It's very ambient, very like, some like neon.
Oh, I remember you talking about it. Yep.
It's that same idea, and it's all music and rhythm based. But this one is a little bit more like, easier to follow. Thumper's a little abstract until you understand the movement of the little beetle or whatever that's going on the track. But this one's more straightforward, like a Guitar Hero or a Rock Band or whatever. But
awesome.
It's super good. Other than that, the boys are done with school, so they're home all the time. All the time. So every like, free time that's normal, like get stuff done or like clean up the house, or there's some projects I've been doing around the house that I've been trying to finish that are just not convenient to do when they're home. So it's been kind of like, hey, summer happened, your schedule explodes. And so we've been kind of figuring that out. Yeah. Other than that, man, everything else is good. I don't care who we toss it to, whoever wants to take it next.
I'll take it, and then Patrick can finish us out.
Okay.
How does that sound? everybody?
I'm good with it.
Oh, he just woke up. It's good. Sure.
Cool. So I have been watching a lot of TV. Yeah, that's a good thing to say. Like streaming stuff.
Okay.
So lots of stuff happened. And one of them I'm going to talk about in my master category. There are a lot of releases, with this being the first full week of June.
Yeah.
But I haven't really gone. I did go to the theater. I did see a movie, and I saw Upgrade, and I can talk about that at a later time or whatever. But I think the winners for what I've been watching this past couple weeks have been, I watched the entire season 5 of Arrested Development, and it's kind of a half season because I think it's only 8 or 9 episodes, so it's only a half season, and it kind of leaves you on this cliffhanger. And then I watched the first 3 seasons of Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that show is great.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know why we've never talked about it on the show and why I've never had a big desire to see it. I remember a couple of years ago when it was winning some awards, I was thinking, oh, maybe I should check that show out. But it was before I had HBO Now and it was before all this other stuff. But
Steve Buscemi is so great.
He's great in it. It actually has completely changed my perspective on him as an actor.
Sure.
Because I've only ever seen him as a character actor, right?
Yeah.
And a comedy and physical comedy and all these different things. And I think that's mostly because of Adam Sandler, right? In Adam Sandler's movies, in which he's played that role. So, but if you're unfamiliar with what the show is, Steve Buscemi plays a mob boss essentially in the 20s during Prohibition, right when Prohibition begins, and he's a bootlegger. It's on the boardwalk of Atlantic City in Jersey. So it's this idea of him and the other mob bosses in these various territories in the surrounding cities of New Jersey and New York and Chicago, and the battle, the internal battles within the bootlegging scene and the Prohibition scene, and then their battles with the law enforcement, who is kind of
right.
It goes back and forth, and so it paints this really gritty. I wouldn't even say a picture. You know, a lot of times people look at these kinds of things and they say that it glorifies or it does not glorify that scene at all. It definitely, for me, makes me glad I didn't live in the 20s where I had to look around my, look over my shoulder every 30 seconds to make sure someone wasn't there.
What season did you say you were on?
I just started season 4.
Okay, cool. I love his right-hand man, his bodyguard guy.
In which season? Because he kind of goes through multiples.
The one that looks different.
The one that looks different. I don't know who that is. So maybe it's season 4?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. I haven't. Yeah. So far I've had James, and then we've had his brother Eli. His brother Eli is who is his kind of his second in command now. Cohen was season 2, that was the Irish guy.
Yeah.
And so it's so they kind of bounce around and.
Well, I mean, I don't know why we're dancing around spoilers, but I can't remember.
Don't spoil it for me.
Yeah, I can't remember where this guy is, so that's why I'm like.
Yeah. So let's just hold off. But I don't know how many of these people are actually based on real people, but I know Al Capone is one of the main characters in the show. So I don't know. I haven't done any of the research to see if Enoch Thompson, Nucky Thompson is the main character. That's Steve Buscemi's character. I don't know if that's based on a real guy or what. I haven't done any research, but the show is great. It's written really well. It's very gritty, very gory at times, very sexual at times. So it's not for the faint of heart.
Sure.
But it is, it's like Westworld or like Game of Thrones. The writing is very, very good. And the story is very, very compelling, and the characters draw you in. So I've been watching a lot of that and a lot of streaming stuff for now. I think that's all that I have for this portion. Patrick, why don't you take us home?
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone knows that this week has been moving week. So transitioning from Chattanooga to Texas to San Antonio. So the big thing in that is, what do you do when you're on the road for 16 hours? Like, you have to fill the time somehow, because that is just brutal. And thankfully, I started listening to an awesome podcast now.
And you learned how to juggle.
Yeah, if you drive with your knees, you can practice juggling.
I love that you did that with your knees and it moved your whole computer back and forth.
Yeah, it's like this. That's what it looks like for the people that, well, you can't see it. It's fine.
Yeah, you can't see this.
But I started listening to the last podcast on the left. Now, this is in no way an unknown podcast. And in fact, I think it is actually the most listened to podcast in the country right now. But that being said, they cover, it's three guys, and they cover a different, it's either like a serial killer or a, are you laughing about the fact that it's
I'm laughing because I was watching you on my screen, and then I realized you're just sitting to the left of me. I can turn and look at you.
Like, I'm watching in the same room right now.
Yeah, we are in the same room right now.
Yeah. But they cover a different, either like serial killer or, like a figure that has a lot of like a mystery surrounding them, or you know, there's big events in history. But the ones I listen to, so these episodes can get pretty long. So I actually listened to I only made it through two stories, because one was a two part episode that was about Britain's most well known serial killer, which was Dennis Nielsen. And the other one was about Rasputin, and that was a four-part series. That one alone, I think, was like 7 hours of audio. And it is just so fascinating, the way that they can tell a story that is largely accurate. I mean, it's not 100%, but they can tell a story that's largely accurate, that it can be so educational in one breath, and in the other breath be no holds barred, you know, funny and witty and also crass and all those type of those things. But they manage the balance so well. So anyway, last podcast on the left, if you're into those type of stories, if you're into like the mystery stories, or if you enjoy learning about like cult leaders and things like that, then I can't recommend it enough. It's definitely not for young ears, but go check it out. And so that would be my big thing this week. I was able to get into Arrested Development, the latest season. I'm only three episodes into the season. I just have this feeling that the characters are just getting too old now. And I hate to say it, and I don't know if it's the amount of shows and movies that we've seen with each of these characters since... I'm thinking all the way back to season three, because we kind of treat four as a throwaway a bit.
You're talking about characters or actors?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm using that interchangeably, yes. Okay. So, yes. You know, part of it could be that I've seen them in so many things that now I just get the roles confused. But it starts, you know, when you watch the first three seasons, it feels so naturally and uniquely them. Like, every person feels so completely their character. And now watching season five, some of these people, it feels like a stretch for them to try to recapture what their character was. And it doesn't feel natural anymore.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like the one that's managed, I'm trying to think right now. I think, for instance, the mom, Lucille.
Yep.
She feels very forced in these first few episodes. And I would say the same thing for George Michael's character. He also feels very forced right now. Now, I think
his character, though, has come through like an evolution, which is a little bit different than some of the other characters. Well, I guess several of them have gone through an evolution, but his is like we grew up with him,
and
he's just becoming an adult and trying to learn how to become an adult, like, while at the same time trying to tiptoe the line of deviating from his character structure too much that people will feel like it's a deviation from.
Well, and maybe his is less the performance and it's more the visual appearance, how much they're trying to like still show him as like young George Michael, you know, going with all like the shaven facial hair and like the, well, just the usual haircut and the way they dress him and everything like that. but it just really feels like it doesn't fit him at this point. In any case, it's been a bit of a struggle for me because it feels like they are playing their characters, but they are feeling more and more like caricatures of themselves, and that's been tough for this season. So the content of the season's actually been pretty good. I've laughed out
solid writing.
Yeah, the writing's solid. I've laughed out loud several times so far, and I'm only a couple of episodes in. It definitely feels like much closer to the original writing. What I'm questioning is if I feel a disconnect with this season, am I feeling a disconnect because of the story, or am I feeling a disconnect because these people, when they did work 8 years ago and they don't work today, or they don't work as well today, maybe that's my disconnect. Maybe that's the thing that is going wrong for me, and it's not the story arc. It's not the directing. It's not those things.
Yeah.
So, but I am excited to finish it. And I think anybody you talk to, or at least anyone I've talked to, said about the same thing, which is that it is definitely a step in the right direction. It's better than season four. It is feeling like it's time to end it for me.
Yeah.
I don't think it should continue on past this without a big change. So one last note. Are y'all still watching Walking Dead?
No. We never got a chance to pick up season eight at all, and so we're waiting until that's streaming to catch up.
I am still watching it. I have found myself not clamoring to get to it on my DVR. Like, there's where I'll have to like end up gang watching three or four episodes because I've gone 3 or 4 weeks and like, oh yeah, Walking Dead. Whereas before, I would drop everything, clear my calendar to watch it. But I would be very careful with what information you might share after saying this.
So do you know the big news from this year?
Yes.
I don't want to know anything.
But don't say it, because it is still very fresh news and very spoilery.
Please don't say anything. I have headphones off.
Yes.
Okay, so...
No, don't say it.
Nobody read the news then, because this. I don't watch it and I still know. It feels like they're pushing it out there. So.
They are pushing it out there, but... People who are actively trying to not hear it would get upset if they heard about it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to backpedal and just walk away from this. Just
signal me when I can put headphones on.
Come back. We're not going to say anything. Come back.
Okay, cool. All right. Yeah.
Nothing's being said. I did read it, though, and I was like, I wish I hadn't read that. But it is all over the internet. So just be careful. If you're listening to this and you're a big Walking Dead fan and you don't want spoilers, tiptoe lightly around any news about The Walking Dead right now, because it is... There's breaking news presently at the time of this record.
Do not Google the word walking and do not Google the word dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bad. If your grandmother needs a walker, don't look for it.
Don't look up, my grandma needs a walker or she will be dead. Because inevitably, you will find
things we don't need to check right now.
Okay, is that all your stuff?
That's it.
Okay, well, that's it for the Around the Table. Up next, we're going to talk with Tom Whalen.
Yeah.
We like to have our friends on the show from time to time, and one of those really good friends is a guy we have on regularly for a segment we call 10 with Tom. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do that segment right now with Mr. Tom Whalen.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for welcoming me back. It's been a while. Maybe we could do 12 with Tom tonight.
Well, okay. Maybe. I'm going to set the timer, but we'll just call it a loose timer. all right, so I'm gonna typically. So if you're listening to the show, this is the first time you're hearing this segment. Maybe we have this time with Tom, and we said 10 minutes. You got 10 minutes to tell us.
We can
what's
maybe
going
just
on.
Call it time with Tom.
What? We should have just called it time with Tom, because then it would have been like, because then whatever. But we initially called it 10 with Tom, and we just said, okay, you know, what's going on in your life? Talk to us about projects that are coming up. And so I'm going to set the timer. If it goes off, if there's still more to say, we make up our own rules. You know, it's going to be fine. Shut up, Luke.
We make up our own sentences too.
Here we go. Your time starts right now.
I think that's it. I think I'm good. That's why I haven't been on in a while.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I got nothing.
So we know that that's, you know, that's obviously not true. You've had quite a bit going on, but why don't you start, make sure we get this whole part in for sure. You've got a show coming up this week in just a couple of days. Why don't you tell everybody what that show is, and then we've got some questions about it.
Yeah, that's a new show with Dave Perillo. It's a two-man show at Gallery 88 in Los Angeles. And it's, I hope the title isn't, I hope it's as self-explanatory as we hope it is. It's 4x4 is the name of the new line we're doing, and Versus is the name of this show. So the line will continue past the show. Okay. But this is the debut of this little 4x4-inch piece screen print show, and the theme this time is Versus. So it's my dumb little tagline for the show is a show by and about people that hate each other. So there's little two print sets of Batman and Catwoman and Doctor Who and a Dalek, and Dave did a whole bunch of permutations on that as well. So that's really the gist of the show. And they're almost like, I wanted to come up for a long time. I've wanted to come up with a little cartoon, almost chibi style, illustration, just a little style to apply different pop culture themes on top of. And that's really where this kind of started for me. And, I hope people dig it.
So I didn't necessarily know from just the glance at it that it was 4-inch by 4-inch. I thought that it was going to be four characters. You were going to do two, because I was seeing you were doing two characters, and then I was seeing that Dave was posting two characters, and I was hoping that what we would see is like four from that set. But this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, that, to be honest, that's like down the road plans.
Okay.
To do sets of four, and kind of initially the original idea was for us to do like, he'd do a bad guy, I'd do a good guy, and then we'd have sets with both of us. And then we started pulling our styles together, and we thought it would be better to do sets that were unique to each of us.
Nice.
So it felt better to have them both pieces from the same person. However, there is one set we did that's one of each of ours.
Okay, that's going to be good.
Yeah.
Have you revealed that one yet, or is that going to be like a Showtime reveal?
No, it's probably a Showtime, a little bit closer to the show.
Cool.
Okay. I guess I can say it here. It's I did a picture of him, an illustration of him. He did an illustration of me. So, and it's going to be it's actually a giveaway to people who come out to the show.
Nice.
That's going to be
wait. Fun. But is it like, did y'all do caricatures of each other?
Yes.
Like, is
it? Yes. And somewhat mean spirited caricatures of
yes,
each other.
Yes. Okay. Exactly what I was hoping. Great.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the questions that I had. The way that you guys have been promoting this show has been a little, I don't want to say unorthodox, but it's been very mean-spirited. It's like almost this sense of, oh, I'm stuck with this guy again, kind of. And obviously it's all done in good, you know, what's the word I'm looking at? In jest, you know, it's all tongue-in-cheek.
Sure, if that's how you feel, I'm sure. I hate the guy.
Or that. Because that's the vibe that you definitely pull from all of the promotional material. So what drove that marketing element?
I feel like I am, like we are two astronauts stuck in a space capsule and we have nowhere to go but just do shows together.
I see. And it's one of those situations where people associate the two of you together, and you're just embracing it. And whether you're happy about it or not, you're just embracing that it's the reality.
Sure. It's just part of the job. It's like going to work every day. It's like working freelance for yourself, but you still have a coworker that you hate that works with you occasionally.
So certainly I've seen your stuff, and of course I've seen Dave's stuff, but how many times have y'all collaborated in the past?
I would say this might be the fourth or fifth show that we've done together. We did four or five together at 88 and one at Spoke Art, so this is five or six times.
Wow. So what do you learn about either yourself or about Dave when you do collaborate, when you have these times where you're working on something? I imagine just by nature of working on a gallery together, you end up challenging each other. But what have you learned about Dave this go around?
Wow. That's a deep question for a...
Well, you said we had 12 this time, so yeah, I thought I would just crank it up a little bit.
2 minutes is going to be tough to fill. to be honest, every time we work together, it just we kind of have our shtick together. It does get we bounce a lot of ideas off of each other, but we do kind of take each of these themes and it's I like the way we work because we kind of can go our own way and still maintain a thread together. I would say as far as learning anything new, he had a strawberry shortcake lunchbox when he was a kid. How about that?
It's like just friends going down like memory lane together.
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever have? So again, this is all very playful and your guys' style, which I want to talk about something here in just a second. So we'll come back to that. But not only does the marketing and your style and everything lend itself to a playful kind of a playful atmosphere, but the colors you guys end up choosing typically are a lot less of a serious quote unquote palette. They're a lot more, there's a lot more energy, a lot more fun to them. But when you're in all seriousness, do you guys ever actually butt heads in these projects, to a point where there's some tension or something that you kind of have to overcome?
Nothing serious. It's funny you brought this up around the color, because we each, in order to gain it, when you're doing screen printing, obviously you're limited by color. So each of us did an eight color sheet. So we pulled from eight different colors to make all of our prints.
Sure.
And the original idea was that he would have an eight color sheet. I would have an eight color sheet and they would be different. And then we'd kind of pick and choose and kind of put some of his on my sheet, some of mine on his sheet, just to kind of make like a big melting pot of colors and pull from as many colors as possible. And I found that I was being, I started designing on my sheet and I didn't want to leave my color scheme. So, he wound up doing more sets than I did anyway. So it's okay. He filled up some of my sheet. There was no animosity over it. It was just a kind of, we started out with an agreement and I kind of reneged on the agreement and just wanted to stay with my own eight colors, as I progress. But as far as any kind of butting heads that we have to work out, no, we really do kind of have our shtick down and
sure
have how we pull these shows together down to almost a science.
Yeah. So without giving anything away, how did it work out for like ideas? If you had a versus idea and he had the same one, like who got to do it, or did you both do it?
Yeah.
Or how does
we started verbally doing it, and then like a week later, I was like, did you take that one or am I going to do that one? So we did an Excel sheet that we could kind of log into on our app. And we had a spreadsheet of who was doing what. Yeah. And then we'd just kind of go on there every time we had an idea and just make sure we weren't overlapping with the other person.
Cool.
Which one of you gets the award for most creative versus?
Oh, Dave, definitely. There's one in there that's like such an off the wall one in my book, but I think it's going to be popular.
Nice.
So I'm going to jump back over to the style thing that we were talking about a little bit earlier. You do have a look, you know, an aesthetic that is pretty pretty noticeable at a glance, right? We've talked about this every other time we talk to you, we mentioned this on some way, shape, or form, right? Some level. But it looks like this time around, you did something a little bit different. It looks like your typical style has evolved a little bit, or you're doing something a little bit different, at least with this show, where you've kind of truncated the characters and made them, like you said, chibi. What was the inspiration for doing that? And is this something we're going to see continue in your other works, or are you just kind of going to use this for this particular series?
I think this is this for me, but I've wanted to do this for a while, and I keep coming back to doing a style like this, and I take a stab at it, and for a project or a one-off print, and never quite. I come back to it after I do it, and I'm like, I don't feel this is what I wanted it to be, but this finally felt like the right proportions, and it's almost like it feels like a vinyl figure style that I've wanted to do. And
that's,
I'd love to turn it into toys as well.
That'd be awesome.
So that's a perfect. So that's 10 minutes, right? So right when you said that, that's your 10 minutes. But we're going into bonus time, everybody. Because that's a perfect segue. We let our patrons know we were going to be chatting with you, and asked them if they had any questions specifically to the show that's coming up. And one of the questions was actually about that. It was from Jetpacks and Roller Skates, and he asked if you were planning on doing any more sculpture work in the future.
I never can say I'm planning on doing that. That's always, if the project pops up when it makes sense, I will do that. And I think I've explained before, those are fun, but they're super labor intensive. Mm-hmm. And I would like to, I backed a, Kickstarter earlier this year. There's a guy named Rokom. He's big into vinyl toys, and I think he's an art director for, Razor Scooters right now, but I know he did a lot of work for the toy in the toy industry, and he did a great take off of Jet Jaguar from the old Godzilla movies. A really cool little vinyl toy. So I really want to pick his brain when that toy gets produced, and kind of try to do something in my maybe in this style down the road as a vinyl.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I have one more question that's not necessarily about the show per se, but it could be more of a general question from Jedi Robbies. He is asking, how do you decide what kind of variants you're going to do when you're working on the variant stuff? Is it when you're choosing a variant, are you choosing whether it's going to be a color insert or a color variant or a character insert? How do you go about choosing those for your projects?
Some of it is based, there's a lot of different factors. Some of it is based on time. Like a character switch is obviously going to take more time than a color switch. A color switch, I can do a few of those in a half hour and get some different results. Character switch has to be planned out and it has to make sense. If I'm going to do a character switch, I don't want to just pop out someone just to swap in, just to make it different.
Yeah.
Plus, but are you doing? Go ahead.
So most of the time I will do a color and then sometimes like a special effect, like a glow or something that you don't see initially would be a variant. I always do it. If it's going to be a character, it'll be a character and a color, but I can also do, obviously you've seen before, I do sometimes just a color switch.
Yeah.
It really is based on time.
Okay. Is it generated, personally, or is it generated from the gallery or from whoever it is that's the client that's having you do it? Are they the ones picking what these variants are, or is this always generated from you?
No, it's definitely collaborative. Okay. Cyclops, I think that was my idea to do the snow. I did a Snow White last year, which the hag and the queen swapped out, and that made a lot of sense. And then that was also a color. And a lot of times, Rob and Mondo will have a great idea for a switch that'll make sense art wise. There's a poster coming up that at San Diego, that's a, color switch only, but it makes a lot of sense.
Hmm. Okay. That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
I guess we will look forward to that. All right. So, like I said, we're in bonus time. Is there any other questions that Patrick or Luke have before we...
On a unrelated note, have you now done a pin for every single character in the Marvel Universe?
No, but I it's funny because Matt Taylor is now doing a lot of the Marvel movie stuff. But I'm definitely... My pin production dropped off earlier this year just because I got distracted with other work. And we've ramped up pin production in the last couple of weeks. So there's a lot more coming out and there's definitely a lot more Marvel, but I've done so much Marvel that there's limited pickings to do, but there's definitely still more.
So, but real quick though, there is one pin that I just saw. And in fact, I just bought from you.
Yeah, I just saw the notification.
what was the Abraham Lincoln pin for?
That was a Rob Jones idea that at the art director at Mondo, he's like, you got to do an Abe Lincoln pin. And I was like, okay. And
whatever you say.
I put them on sale on President's Day weekend, and I sold like 7 of them. I'm like, this was not worth doing. the copper. It really did turn out well, and they have trickled out very well since then. It was just a odd sale structure, but I hope to do more of those. I wanted to do for 4th of July, do like a Ben Franklin, but that didn't happen this year, but hopefully next year.
I have a question. I had an internet connection problem, but it was on the vein of variance. Do you pick, and I don't know if you want to share this or not, do you pick the your favorite colorway as the variant or as the normal? Or do you have
typically
a preference?
I will do the one that I've worked the whole project, like the week and a half project, I've settled it on it, and that's typically the regular. Mm-hmm. And then the ones that I come up with aside of that will be the variants.
Okay.
Sometimes it gets flipped, but most of the time what I consider the one that I've been working with is the regular.
Cool.
And then sometimes it makes sense that should be the variant. If we come up with a different colorway that makes sense if it makes more sense as the regular.
Right.
Yeah. That sounds like it makes sense. All right. Tell everybody about this show, where they can find it, how they can follow you, how they can support you, all that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So the show opens on Friday, June 8th and at Gallery 1988 in Los Angeles on 7038 Melrose. It's 7 to 9 p.m. opening reception, and then all the prints will be online Saturday the 9th, usually around between 12 and 1 Pacific time.
Can you tell us how many are in each run?
Yeah, Dave did 28 sets, I did 19, and each of those sets has 40 copies of each of the edition is 40.
Okay,
so it's fairly limited.
Yeah, but it sounds like there's going to be
a lot of variety, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of variety, and it sounds like we've only scratched the surface on what's already been revealed. So yeah. I can't wait to see.
Dave leans more video game, I would say. We all have a healthy mix of everything, but I did a lot of comic book stuff. I would say he more video game and movies, and there's a few oddballs on each side. So
you know, we've never had Dave on the show. I'm just realizing. Yeah, like, let's not talk about it.
It's a successful show, so I wouldn't expect him to be on this.
Man, so go, if you're in the area, go check it out. Send us pics, because we're going to be sad that we're going to miss it, but we will be tuning in to online on Saturday to pick up probably as much as we possibly can. But as always, you are a rad dude. Thank you so much for your time. We know you're busy, but for giving us a whole extra, like, 7 minutes. This is like... Man, this is like a double episode.
Yeah, it makes up for all the ones we missed.
Yeah, yeah, we're set. We're set. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, man.
Up next, Master Categories. The Master Category section each week is when we get to take the tokens we drew the week before that give us our categories, and we pick our topics based on those categories. Pretty simple setup.
Yep.
I don't know why anyone would have any trouble explaining it. Patrick, why don't you kick things off for us this week?
Absolutely. This is a great week to talk toys and games because of what just happened a few days ago. So we had Five Points Festival. This goes on every year in the whatever the Five Points District is.
New York.
In New York. And it's a festival that it's curated by Clutter Magazine, and it's just all things, you know, designer toys, art, you know, also beer. But everybody is there. So, Designer Con is the big event that happens on the West Coast, and Five Points Fest is the big event that goes on the East Coast. The other thing that happens, and you'll hear us mention the DTAs or Designer Toy Awards every year, those are also given out during the Five Points Festival. I think it's, and this is where I don't know, but I think it's on the first night of the festivals when they actually do the DTAs and give those out. So, we are on the heels of that, and we had a member of our community, Nate Bear, who actually we've had on the show before, way, way back when we were doing our panel series, and you can find this in the archive somewhere. Nate Bear joined us for that, but he was at the event and he shared a bunch of photos with us. Now, what I didn't know is that they also do a live draw. Did y'all see the live draw or the charity draw that they did?
No.
Was it similar? Was it like the boards that they do for like ink?
So yeah, if for those that are familiar with something like Ink Wars that they do at Creative South, it's like a similar thing. They have eight panels set up and people going at it. And really, like, people that are huge names in the industry, so like Quicks or Andrea Kang, Chris RWK, Jim McKenzie, which was a fun one to see. I don't know if y'all follow Jim McKenzie much, but
he did that Scarecrow statue.
So we talked about the Scarecrow on the show, yes, but he does a lot of just like really tongue-in-cheek, like really funny stuff.
Yeah.
He's definitely someone you want to go look up his videos, and everything he does is really high quality. But one of the things that I saw, and so Nate Bear, like I said, took a bunch of pictures, and one of the things that was in his picture is by an artist, CZ. I was not... Like, I haven't heard of CZ before until I saw this, and I just really wanted to, you know, saw the piece, looked really cool, went back and found his Instagram to see his other work. I think I shared it with you guys. It's the spray can, and the spray can has, like, two eyes, and instead of, like, tears or whatever, it's, like, ink is, like, well, it's, like, paint is, like, coming out of the eyes and dripping down. Do y'all see that right now?
Are you talking about the money that has a spray head?
Yes, it's a money with a spray head. Yes,
cool. Yeah.
So and he does other stuff. His texture kind of reminds me of Frank Mutagno, like a bit similar as far as the texture. But he really nails the like rust like look and feel of
the
everything.
The cookie one is crazy. The cookie looks really good. That cookie head.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So if you go look at his Instagram, which is CZ13Art, that's two E's, it's like the one that he posted on the 4th or the 5th is a cookie. And again, the texture this guy gets is incredible. It's dead on. You know, this is going to – I don't mean this in a negative way, but there have been several times where I've seen like art toys by people like Custom Toys, and they look fantastic. And then you kind of see them up close, or you kind of start digging a little deeper, and there's just a lot of imperfections. And again, it's not, I mean, there are people that sit and really put in the detail, but you don't always feel it with every toy. And, you know, I'm not going to name names, but there are some toys that I've like paid some considerable money for, and then got and been a little bit let down by the finishing of everything, or been a little bit let down by, again, like the texturing or some of that stuff. Everything that I'm seeing from CZ just looks absolutely top notch and looks absolutely very finished. So for being something that is supposed to look like it's, you know, decomposing. But anyway, really, really love his stuff. If you're not familiar, so because this just happened, there are still a lot of, you know, customs that people made for this event, a lot of print stuff people made for this event that, you know, didn't sell or they had extra that are still available. So if you're looking to add to your collection, if you're looking to see what's out there, there'll be links in the show notes, but go check out 5 Points Fest. You'll be able to see the, you know, the winners of the DTAs this year. And then go look up some of these artists, go through some of these albums and see the kind of stuff that's out there. Really, really cool stuff. And it gives you an idea of what's, you know, what trends are kind of around the curve in the toy industry as well. So from this past weekend, Luke, Andrew, have either of y'all seen anything that's just really stood out to y'all coming out of 5 Points Fest?
Yeah, from Nate's photos, let me go back to his album. He posted a picture. I don't know who it was. It's Calamity. It's Red Legfoss. It's like the big mech, the red like mech with the skull
absolutely.
Face, and then like the like masked person on the like stomach. It looks like it has like a big gun or sword. That,
so you like that?
The detail on that is incredible. Yeah, I love it. The one right before it, the other huge mech that's just all white, looks like it's a blank almost. That sculpt is incredible too. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff just from his album. It has those two stupid turtles that you have that look like garbage.
I was just
going
to say, did you see the Michelangelo?
Those stood out to me too. Oh, man.
The Ruffle and Toast by Course. That's just a great idea. I really like it.
I hadn't seen that one yet. That's the first. I mean, I get the Course, like, you know, the newsletter, so I'll hear, like, their new announcements or whatever. but I somehow totally missed that one, and it's great.
Yeah, it is.
I still don't see what you're talking about.
It's like a
pictures.
It's like a pigeon, and the pigeon is like holding a piece of bread, and so it's ruffle and toast.
Oh, it's
but
not,
it's in the coarse style. Like, it's
but it's
that,
not on Nate's photos.
Yeah, it is.
Where?
I don't know. It's like this fourth or fifth one, maybe sixth. I'm not sure.
And we'll post a link to this gallery we're referring to so you can see the gallery.
If Nate says
oh,
it's okay.
Oh, I see it. I see it now. That's great. That is great. Yeah. I like that a lot. My favorite that I saw at the Toy Award, one of the Toy Awards, was that Tara McPherson's Wonder Woman from Kid Robot that released last year, or maybe it was earlier this year. Gosh, I love that one so much.
Did you say Tara McPherson walked away with an award this year?
Yes. She walked away with an award this year.
Which one?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I just saw that she won for something, but it was for her Wonder Woman piece that she did with Kid Robot, and I wanted that piece so bad, I just couldn't pull the trigger on it. And now that it's won an award, I'm sure it will be even harder to pull the trigger on it. I don't even know if they're available at Kid Robot's site anymore. I guess I could check that, but that was it. I saw a bunch of people who were there. Obviously, I follow Gary Hamm, and I follow Horrible Adorables, and I follow Super Plastic, and I follow several people, and Nate. I follow several people who were at the event, so I've been seeing stuff from it, but I've had a lot going on, so I haven't been super like keyed in on any of that.
Sure.
Well, very cool. Well, it just happened. So the next one this year, the next big event will be DesignerCon. We're still a little bit away. I think we have another 160 days before we get there. But definitely, if you're interested in this type of world, if you haven't been before, if you're on the East Coast, Five Points Fest is the place to be. Just go and start making your plans for next year. I know that we want to make it out there as well next year. And so hopefully you will see us around. Andrew.
Yeah.
Go ahead and take it from me.
Sure. So I'm going to stay on the same theme of toys. I got TV and film this week. And one of the things that released last week was Making Fun, which is the Netflix documentary of Funko. And it's a full-length feature of the origins of Funko. And so I know we've talked about Funko, so many times on this show. We've gone up and down the roller coaster.
I would say probably enough times.
What?
I would say probably enough times.
Nope. In fact, actually, so we watched Jurassic Park for the first time. That was something I should have mentioned in the Around the Table. I'll go back to that at a different week. But I did pick up this, the Tyrannosaurus Rex pop, which mm-hmm. looks super, super fun. And the quality is just great. For what you're paying, especially. But anyway, the Funko Making Fun documentary, I'm not going to do much. I'm not going to say much about it because there's no reason for me to retell the story of Funko. I'll just do a quick review of it, and then you can go watch it for yourself if you're intrigued by it. It was really interesting to see the origins of this company, and it hasn't been around as long as I thought that it was. Here's a weird statement, but it's been around longer than I thought it would have been.
It's been around a while.
That's it's a weird thing to say, but like the company is both older and younger than I thought based on the size of it and various things. It got its start in this shop doing bobbleheads, essentially. The very first thing they ever did was a Big Boy bobblehead for Big Boy at one particular location, and then they ended up selling those at Universal City, like Universal Studios City Walk in Hollywood. And that was kind of where they got their start. And to see where they've come now as a company, they've changed hands only one time from the CEO, the original founder and CEO, to the current CEO. And the founder and previous CEO is now back on staff doing event, like running all of the events and things. It's really, really inspiring to see something come from like, you know, homegrown origins and see how that has kind of played itself into this multi-million dollar company that's global at this point and has fans all over the world. The way that stuff was shot, And the way that they composed everything and curated the whole thing was really well done. They kind of did these like four or five different, they call them fanatics, I think is what they're called. And they are the, or fanatics, they're one or the other, but they're like big Funko.
Fanatics would make more sense.
Fanatics would make more sense. But they follow them, and there's a couple of from all over the world, essentially, and it's people who have really kind of unassuming jobs, all the way to like pro wrestlers who are big Funko fans and have like massive collections in their house, and it's just really crazy to kind of see how eclectic the fan base is. And so anyway, I think it's like, on the documentary is, let me see the runtime on it. I'm having a hard time finding it right now. Runtime is 1 hour and 39 minutes. So it's not terrible. But the way it's shot, the story that they tell is really, really cool. Takes you all the way up to the recent opening of their, headquarters a couple months ago. And
that place is nuts.
It looks amazing. I would love to go there as the podcast and interview some of the people there and everything, because it is truly, truly a destination. Whether you're a Funko fan or not, just to go there and see all these properties, in larger than life fashion, it's kind of like a mini theme park that you can buy toys. So anyway, I would give the documentary probably an 8. Certainly held my attention, gave me a little bit of inspiration. I just think it's really, really good. So that's it for me. Luke, why don't finish us out?
Okay. That's on Netflix, right?
Yeah, it's Netflix. Yep.
Okay, cool. I'll have to check it out. I'm not a huge Funko fan, but I will definitely, my interest has peaked.
Yeah, I think there's something for people who enjoy toys, and I think there's something for people who enjoy like entrepreneurs,
yeah,
and seeing how companies run and seeing how just even like the history of a company being built to a company that's currently flourishing. And it's a little bit different than like the Toys That Made Us, which is that like little mini docu-series or whatever. It's different from that because all of these companies are still actively a thing and,
Okay, so for my category, I had art and design, and normally that's a rough one for me, but I found an artist on Instagram that just blew me away. So I paint miniatures and stuff for D&D and other like tabletop games that are small.
That is true.
They're small. It's small, and not a lot of people paint things that are small like that. When I saw this, it was a completely like just astonishing kind of thing. So this guy, his name is Joshua Ranger on Instagram. He is J.H.Ranger_artworks, and he does coin art. So I'm sure people have seen like where you carve a skull out of the head. That's a pretty common like change to a metal coin. But he is doing like that times 100. So he's going in and taking out the background and inlaying like flames or gears or like pipes. And then he's adding to, he's inlaying things like ruby and 24 karat gold, like real sapphires, silver, some different, like slightly different colored copper pieces in, into pennies, like, or nickels or buffalo nickels. It's just the scale he's doing this work on is just incredible.
The amount of depth that he's getting in this, I wouldn't even think those coins were that deep enough to do that.
I know. It's just insane. But he sells everything he makes. He sells on eBay, and then he also has a print shop where he sells the prints through Redbubble. He'll just sell a print, and it's weird because it looks like it's just a print of the photo that he posted on Instagram. So, it's okay, I guess. But you can actually buy the the actual pieces. And he does, it looks like his Instagram is mostly the coin work, but he does other things like pendants, or he's done like knife engraving and there's a Zippo lighter on there, just all kinds of stuff that you can engrave, made of metal that you can engrave, and just, it's incredible. And then of course, as I got looking at him, I started looking at other just coin artists, and there's a lot of really good guys out there, but he's the one that feels like he's doing more than just carving out. He's doing like inlays back in with other things.
Yeah.
Man, it's
some of these
so
like
good.
Clockwork ones that he has where you see all the gears.
Yep.
We'll have to use one of these for the episode artwork. So if you haven't already looked this up, just look at our episode artwork and you'll have an idea
there's
of what we're talking about.
There's the skull with the octopus tentacles. Like, it's
Hydra.
It's insane. Just the detail on it is just so good.
It is. It's way good.
But yeah, I don't really have much to say except I don't think I could ever do that. And I really appreciate that. So really good.
Yeah, you kind of have to see it to believe it and to appreciate it.
Yeah, so go check him out. It's J.H.Ranger_artworks on Instagram. Follow him, give him a couple likes or whatever. And then you can buy prints, or when he posts something, you can go to eBay and purchase something. And I have no idea the range on that stuff. I think it's anywhere from $100 for a penny up to $1,000 for a pendant. Like,
I assume if it's something I really, really like, that it's more than I can afford.
That's a fair assumption.
Yep.
With most things in life.
Yeah. The Van Gogh, he did a Van Gogh on a buffalo nickel, it looks like. Yeah. It's crazy. It's so good.
Yeah.
That's me. Good. That's it.
Okay. Well, that's it for this episode. You can find us on mof1podcast.com where you can find show notes and links to all the stuff that we talked about in this episode. Make sure you go check out Tom and Dave's 2-person show this weekend. It's just a few days away, and all of those extra pieces I'm sure will go online. So keep your eye out for that. And follow us on social, MF1 Podcast, all over the different platforms. Subscribe, like, share, comment, rate, review. That helps us so, so much. Without doing that, we wouldn't have the listener base that we have. So if you haven't done that yet, make sure you do that. It helps us out so much. You can also support the show financially by going to patreon.com/MF1 Podcast to throw a couple of dollars in the bucket each month. That helps us out. You can also support the podcast financially by going to shop.mof1podcast.com, and you can help us out and then also get a cool hat or a pin or a shirt or a mug. There's all sorts of stuff that you can get. So if you haven't checked that out yet, please go and do that. I think that's everything though, right?
Yeah.
I'm not missing anything. You're not missing anything. I think we're going to get out of this episode. I'm Andrew.
I'm Patrick.
And I'm Luke.
Peace out.
Bye.
Hold on to your butt.